Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level. Easy, free.
Welcome to the Cullen Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in company's profile. Now, the Cullen Economics Report.
Everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for the weekend edition, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, the KE Report. On this weekend show, it was a bit of a slower news week in terms of economic data, and everybody, I think, waiting for that next Fed meeting coming next week. Overall, though, we're going to jump around to a number of different markets, try to get an understanding of if some of these markets, some of these sectors are going to break out of some ranges that they have now been in for around a year. We're kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief over at The Money Show. Now, Mike, first comment on the S&P. Let's look at this broad average and break down where it's gone. The S&P went through about a 10-month bear market after it peaked at the very beginning of 2022, bottomed in October, and now has had 10 pretty solid months. The market's been up 8 out of the last 10 months, and as long as it holds this month, that would also be 6 out of the last 7 months. So quite a run for the markets. They haven't made it back to those highs that we saw at the very beginning of 2022. But the biggest question for investors is, Mike, do you think these markets have gotten a little too overheated?
Sure. You know, that's a great setup that you have there. I mean, it really has been a heck of a run here, especially off this year's March lows. And then, as you pointed out, the October low last year for the S&P. One thing I think I continue to point out and is still why I'm leaning bullish. And I think, sure, we might be short term overextended, but I think in the long term that be bold investing approach still works. And I think that the biggest point I'd make is that, yes, what you described is accurate for the S&P. What's, kind of behind the scenes is that all of this cycle's, this boom-bust cycle's junk names, you know, just like in the dot-com era, all of that era's garbage stocks and so on, they did much worse than the S&P. I mean, the S&P had, what, that 10-month or so, give or take, bear market. But when you look at behind the NASDAQ, and especially some of these companies that were, again, dot-com style, the losses there were 70, 80, 90%. They were over 18 months, and many of these companies just went flat-out broke. So, you know, you cleaned out a lot of the excesses. So I think in terms of how many stocks and sectors performed behind the S&P 500 scene, it was a lot worse. The carnage was a lot worse. It was very much more dot-com bust-like. That's one of the reasons why, as we rolled into 2023, I was a lot more optimistic because, you know, you obviously had the big market averages that suffered. You had the worst year for not just stocks in a long time, but also stocks and bonds. I think the 60-40 portfolio, I forget what the stat was something like the worst performance in 100 years. So, I mean, things were, again, a lot worse than just what you'd see by tracking only the S&P. That, conversely, also is one reason why I think we're doing so well now. We really did clean out a lot of the garbage, and we did reset valuations, and we did reset investor sentiment, and all those things that were way out of control to the upside and too frothy. And that's why I think, you know, I'm much more optimistic, and that's why I kind of switched from that be boring investing approach I've been advocating for the previous 18 months. So I guess to tie it up with a bow, yeah, we're overextended now. Yes, sentiment at the retail investor level is pretty frothy. Yes, some of these indicators, put calls and ratios and things like that, are indicating that the market's run pretty far, pretty fast. So, you know, we might have a seasonal breather and might see some weakness here for the next month or two. But in terms of long-term investor positioning, I don't think you want to get off that be bold train. I think that, you know, you've got a Fed that's moving to the sidelines. You've got a dollar that's weakening as a result. You've got an economy that appears to have dodged the worst of what could have happened given, you know, the sharp rise in interest rates. So, you know, with that sort of backdrop, I don't see why you want to be, as an investor, again, a longer-term investor, why you want to be getting off this train.
Well, Mike, hats off to you because you were spot on with the be boring part in the defensive play during the carnage, really starting, as you highlighted, in the middle of 2021, long before 2022 even arrived. A lot of the stay-at-home stocks and a lot of the cryptos and a lot of the growth tech stocks had already started rolling over. But now your be bold message was really spot on again because you're looking at the trends where they just stopped going down. They were already pretty beat up. A lot of the trash had been taken out. You compile a list from a number of analysts with the Money Show and a number of different thought leaders and kind of track some different stocks. Are there any themes that you're seeing? I know you have like a top 10 that you follow, but also you compile a big list of what's trending with other investors. Any patterns you're seeing develop there as far as folks getting a little more bullish now in the markets?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we have Money Show has been putting together a top picks report at the beginning of each year for decades now. And essentially we go out to all the newsletter editors and other providers, content partners that, you know, have been tracking the market themselves in many cases for a few decades and just say, hey, you know, what is your top pick for 2023? What are your, you give us a more aggressive name and also a more kind of conservative one. Some of them just do one, some of them do two and so on. But anyway, and I track the performance of that. And through mid-year, you know, we just published an updated report called The Terrific 10, which looks at of the 116 picks from 68 different providers for 2023, which stocks are in the top 10 and what do they look like? And, you know, most of them, to no surprise, given what we're talking about in terms of the broader averages, are from the tech sector. The number one stock was a company called MongoDB. MDB is the ticker. They're in the software space. That name was up about 130% in the first half of the year. I actually tracked it from January 9th, which is when the original report was published. You know, then you had other names like Shopify that were in there. And then towards the lower end of the 10 were your big names like Microsoft, Amazon, and Alphabet. So again, mostly in tech, but there were a few exceptions. Ironically enough, given that it's been a tougher market for junior miners in general, this one company, Bravo Mining, traded in Vancouver, actually has done very well. That was from one of our contributors. That was up about 83% in the first half. And then, you know, you had one or two other names, Celsius Holdings, which is the company that sells that, like the energy style drinks, like Monster Beverage and so on. That company's had a nice rebound too. But again, mostly tech, a few exceptions to that. And I think that, you know, that is to be expected given what we've seen in the first half of the year. But one of my big theses and expectations, and actually from some of our contributors as well, is that you're probably going to see tech, you know, no longer be leading every day, every week, you know, being strong while other stocks aren't doing much of anything. I think a lot of people, myself included, are looking for the market advance to start broadening out, meaning tech doesn't start crashing or falling apart or anything like that, but it probably starts underperforming to some degree, and some of the other sectors play catch-up. Your small caps, your energies, your industrials, things of that nature that hadn't really been participating, I think you're going to start seeing participate more. And, you know, when you look at things like the IWM and so on, the small cap ETF, it's actually at, what, a five-month high here. So you're already seeing some of that healthy broadening out of the market. I think it was in one of our interviews, I don't know, maybe last month or the month before, where I laid out that things are probably going to go one of two ways. Either the rest of the market, or excuse me, either tech is going to play catch down to the rest of the market, meaning, you know, this was an anomalous advance for tech and it simply can't hold up while everything else lags, or tech's going to take a breather and the rest of the market's going to play catch up. And I think so far that, you know, in the second scenario was my favorite, and so far that looks like to be what's playing out. So that to me is bullish longer term.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. So far, the rest of the market is playing catch up to tech. We've seen a bit more of a rotation into a wider range of stocks, which is healthy for the markets. We also have the VIX at these low levels. There's still a lot of people out there that are worried about some big fall for these markets. Everyone's still worried about that recession that keeps getting pushed off. But overall, just looking at this market action, there's been a wide range of stocks, a wide range of sectors to make money in, and clearly investors still very much keeping their money within the markets while also diversifying a little bit into some higher yielding safe instruments as well. It's a very interesting market environment that we have, and the last 10 months were drastically different than the 10 months before that. Mike, we're having you back on next segment. We'll keep talking markets. We'll even dive into some other sectors. So everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back with Mike.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
Hi, I'm your host, Smokey Colbert, filling in for Smokey, because after 75 years of...
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Turns out there's much more to say. Nearly 90% of wildfires are caused by us humans being careless, dumping our used barbecue coals willy-nilly. Guess the song was wrong. We did start the fire. That's why I respect Mother Nature and her trees, whether coniferous or new car scented. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
I need some extra money. Do I qualify for the Earned Income Tax Credit?
Use the EITC Assistant tool. With just a little information, this tool helps you calculate eligibility with ease and accuracy, get an estimate of how much credit you qualify for, and get a printout of your results before you prepare your return or visit your tax preparer. To use the EITC Assistant tool and see if you're eligible to claim a credit, visit irs.gov/EITC.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau d'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
You're
weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we are continuing to chat with Mike Larson. Now, Mike, considering this different environment for investors, where investors do have an alternative, they can make safe yielding investments, are you surprised that we haven't seen higher yield or higher dividend type stocks also get some more money coming in?
Let me answer that question first by giving a little background. I think one of the reasons why I'm less concerned about this sort of bullish overrun where everything, you know, we're in some big bubble again is that that's what we already had, right? It was ZERP, it was Zero Forever, it was TINA, there is no alternative, blah, 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 all those acronyms that in a zero interest rate world, everybody was just dogpiling into all the junk and chasing that because there was no competition. What we're seeing now, because short-term yields are in that 4.5-5% range, you know, maybe a little bit higher if the Fed hikes again, and because interest rates, real interest rates, are no longer in negative territory, this isn't more speculative. This is, you know, a better environment where people can say, some people are going to say, you know what, give me 5%, I'm fine with that, I'll just keep my money in money funds, whereas before it was, I can't keep that, I need to just throw my money at every dumb idea out there. So in some regards, that competition for money is actually one of the things that underscores how this is healthier, because you're not seeing manic chasing behavior, you're seeing, like I pointed out, broadening advance, people saying, you know what, maybe I'll look at some small caps and put some money to work there. You know what, financials were terrible at the beginning of the year because of the bank failures. Maybe I'll start to put some money to work there. Heck, you talk about some of the higher yielding sectors. While we're talking, I just pulled up the XLRE, which is the real estate, you know, the REIT ETF. It was performing terribly for quite some time. Guess what? It's right around a 5-month high. So you are starting to see, again, so even some of those beaten down sectors start to attract money as opposed to just an environment where it's only these money losing moonshot tech type companies and SPACs and everything that we're taking off. So, you know, as long as that broadening out is happening, as long as that you know, that catch up versus catch down scenario is what's going on, you know, I'm going to stay in the bullish camp.
One of the things that's been helping really all markets has been the U.S. dollar weakening. You know, we saw the U.S. dollar really peak last year above 14. I think it was 1470, 1480 it got to. It's been pulling back since the fourth quarter, but even recently it's continued to pull back, and a lot of machine trading is based off the health of the dollar. What do you make of that dynamic in the mix here?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the dollar last year, one of the reasons why gold essentially was flat in an environment where you would think, geez, everything else is doing poorly, you know, risk is up and so on, why isn't gold going up? Instead, I mean, it outperformed stocks dramatically, but it also didn't rise much of anything. Part of that was just because of this relentless dollar rally, which was based on the idea the Fed was going to keep hiking and hike to kingdom come, and, you know, and that is just a problem for anything that's a contra dollar type play. But yeah, as you, once the Fed's eternal hiking approach sort of people realized, okay, this isn't going to go on forever. They're going to probably get to a point where they're going to move to the sidelines in 2023, plus other central banks were going to start playing catch-up to the Fed. What happened? The dollar topped out last, you know, September, October, November, and, you know, we just hit that, whatever it was, 14, 15-month low. I think that this move lower in the dollar is for real. I think that it's going to continue. I think that the interest rate differential scenario where the Fed's just on rampage and the rest the world's not keeping up, that backdrop is over. So, you know, I think that, again, multinationals, dollar-sensitive commodity-type things, those are going to perform better just because I think, I do think that the dollar rally is going to turn into probably a dollar slog. I don't think the dollar is going to crash, but I do think it's probably going to be continue to be weaker, and, you know, that's why you want to be looking at contra-dollar plays. You want to be looking at some foreign stocks, ETFs, things like that, and, of course, precious metals as well.
So is this dollar slag due to the fact that the Fed is, for the most part, done hiking? Is it due to the fact that other countries are going to start doing better? What is the reason for the dollar just slogging?
I'm going to say yes to both. I'm going to say what you did, the two factors you just named are absolutely part of this. The Fed is, again, the Fed is no longer charging at the forefront of this rate hiking campaign. It's no longer hiking as aggressively and nobody else is keeping up. It's going to be a different scenario where other foreign central banks are still playing catch up to some degree, whereas the Fed can move to the sidelines. You know, the U.S. economy, I think, has cooled off. Inflation has come off the boil. It's heading in the right direction and it's probably going to continue to come down, although I don't think we're going to get back into any know, disinflation, deflation, or whatever, you know, being a major risk. But in all those scenarios, to me, that's dollar bearish or at least dollar neutral, and it's bullish for commodities, it's bullish for gold, it's bullish for, you know, foreign equities over U.S. And I'd also point out a lot of our Money Show contributors have pointed out, and some of the people I respect the most when I read their big think pieces, and that, you know, foreign stocks have really dramatically underperformed U.S. in part because the U.S. has all of the big cap major tech names that dominate the global averages. But, you know, if you get in a scenario where the dollar is getting weaker, some foreign economies look to be in better shape, the U.S., you know, Fed is not being super aggressive, then maybe this is the time for you to say, hey, I've only been keeping 10% of my money in international funds. Maybe I go to 20, or, you know, you start looking at some of these foreign names that trade in the U.S. or that trade in Canada or whatever that look attractive. So,
yeah, maybe it's time to broaden one's search to some of the foreign markets that haven't had all that love, and they pick up a currency exchange perk from investors. But you mentioned the commodities there. You mentioned the precious metals, but we haven't really talked about energy and oil and net gas. That's a big factor in inflation. It's a big factor in the cost of doing business. It's a big factor for consumers. Any outlook on oil or net gas, Mike?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, the situation there, obviously the Saudis are really trying to prop up the oil market single-handedly and with a couple of other OPEC members participating. They're not getting much help, in particular, I think, because of Chinese demand concerns. I mean, you know, if you look across the globe, where is there some you know, just economic drag coming from? And it's China. They're talking about doing some stimulus, but not on the order. I mean, not like the kinds of stuff we saw 10, 15, 20 years ago where the, you know, the Chinese stimulus be hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars all in a quarter. They're spreading things out. They're doing stuff that has less of an impact on commodities demand. So I think that's probably the issue there. You know, I'm a little, I'm sort of neutral, I guess, in that sector. I do think energy stocks are a pretty compelling bargain. I don't think oil prices are going to be falling much lower, ditto for natural gas. But I think if I had to look where I'd, you know, be putting money in the commodity space, or again, I still like some of the precious metals because of the dollar kicker, or maybe some of the other economically sensitive sectors that aren't necessarily facing the issues that you're seeing in terms of oversupply with energy.
What about cryptos, too? First of all, what's your outlook for Bitcoin? And being editor-in-chief at The Money Show, what sort of interest do you see in the crypto sector from your guys' conferences?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's still not a big, despite the fact Bitcoin itself is up, well, I mean, pretty substantially year to date, it's like 80%, 85%, I think. You know, you still don't have that crazy fascination and everything with it. I think because so many people got burned, again, you know, you look at Bitcoin and a lot of the crypto space, meme stocks, I mean, they started falling in late 2021, so the bear market was longer, the bear market was more severe, a lot of people got cleaned out, there were all the questions of fraud and you know, is your money safe, and this, that, and the other. So I think a lot of people are in the once burned, twice shy mentality, even though from a pure price, you know, standpoint or asset class standpoint, crypto, Bitcoin has been right at the top of the performance list this year. I think it's going to be more of a time, you know, passage of time before you see really, really, you know, extreme excitement about it anymore. But I do think there's still that core community that we hear from that are still interested. It's still content people want to know about. But you know, even with this rally that we've had in 2023, it's nowhere on the order of what you saw a few years back. So,
Mike, as always, thanks for chatting. Love hearing your thoughts on these markets. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance, it's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
News update. A brutal heat wave and dangerously hot weather gripping the country.
This is a whole level of different sun.
One man recently suffering a heart attack after mowing his lawn. Dr. Brittany Owen says the heat likely played a role.
As he then was having an extra load of stress from the heat on his body in addition to the manual stress. That's what finally tipped him over the edge.
President Biden securing commitments from several leading AI companies to develop their cutting-edge technology responsibly.
These seven companies have agreed to voluntary commitments for responsible innovation.
More now on the story from correspondent Brian Shook.
The White House and top tech companies are launching new safeguards around the emerging AI technology. President Biden said today the commitment from companies including Google, Amazon, and others are real. I'm Brian Shook.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. That's 800-524-3810.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, we are going to shift our focus a little bit more into the commodity sector as we are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner over at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, look, as much as we talk about markets and as much as we still focus on metals, and especially precious metals, fact of the matter is it's still a pretty slow market. A lot of sectors are range-bound. The U.S. equity markets have continued to do pretty decently, but we're still seeing generally low volume. We are in the middle of summer, and it feels like the slow summer trading season started even a bit early this year. So, Jeff, as you're talking to your clients, those people interested in different metal sectors, what have people been asking you about? And even more so, what are people still worried about?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the correlation between the markets for metals and the markets for CPM, for research on metals, is actually kind of low. When prices are rising, a lot of people want our research and our consulting, and they can afford it. But in situations like this summer, yeah, the markets are very quiet. Gold and silver, platinum and palladium have been kind of moving sideways. Copper's been moving up slowly, but steadily, you know. But our work has been very busy. And it's spread across all of our metals and all of our areas of expertise. So precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, palladium, you know, high purity manganese, molybdenum, tantalum, energy metals, all of those things are being asked about. And as well as our views of the economy and our views of the energy transition. And then it's research and it's consulting, but it's also asset management and commodities management and investment banking advisory work, too. Like, what do I invest in? What don't I invest in? And stuff like that. If I break it all down, the things that people are asking us the most about this summer, one is the economy. You know, and it's like the big question is, okay, I heard that we'd be in a recession or depression by now. I heard that the dollar would have collapsed and then we'd be facing hyperinflation. And, you know, CP Enbridge said, no, none of that's going to happen, at least in 2023, and it hasn't. So talk to me about the state of the economy in the short term. What's going on now? Why were all those predictions wrong? And what comes next? What comes, you know, in the last 4 months of 2023 and 2024 and 2025? But also talk to me about the longer-term economy. So that's one big ball of wax that people have been asking us a lot of questions about. And then the other one is the energy transition and its effect on metals and the technological uncertainties which limit capital expenditures on everything from raw materials to motor manufacturing to component manufacturing to go into windmills and turbines and electric vehicles. So, you know, the whole issue of I spoke at the PDAC on a realistic assessment of the energy transition and its effect on metals. That is the other big thing that people keep asking us about this summer.
Well, Jeff, let's talk about that second theme of the energy transition. How does some of these new energy sources or the manufacturing around electric vehicles, that whole clean energy transition, factor into the commodity sector? What are some of the big themes that you're taking away, and what are you sharing with audiences?
Well, one of the points that we made at PDAC and make repeatedly is not all energy technologies are the same. So solar power, you know, it relies on silver. There's plenty of silver. Silver's not a strategic or critical metal. There's enormous amounts of silver both in refined form and in the ground. So solar power is roaring ahead and doing a really good job and there. Windmills have some issues, partly with, you know, molybdenum and rare earth elements for the motors and molybdenum for the high-strength steel for the towers. But it also faces a lot of NIMBY opposition. Windmills are great, but not in my backyard. You know, I don't like the squeaking sounds or, you know, they interrupt my view of the mountains or the ocean, stuff like that. And then electric vehicles have all kinds of problems. And one of the things that you're seeing is that, you know, you have these unattainable projections. Oh, we'll have 50% of the vehicles being made in 2030 electric and 100% by 2035. And then you look at those and you say, okay, so this is your expectation for the demand for electric vehicles, the production and demand for electric vehicles. And then you look at the high-purity cobalt sulfate that's needed and the high-purity manganese sulfate and the high-purity nickel sulfate and the graphite and then the rare earths for the motors. None of them are anywhere near 50% of the capacity needed, projected. You know, so you have these projections out to 2035 where you have these yawning deficits in all these raw materials, and then you have yawning deficits in what they call pre-CAM chemicals and processes, which take those raw materials and put them into precursor chemicals that are used for the cathode active materials. And then you have problems with motors and stuff. You know, we're building 13 million electric vehicle motors now, but if you're going to be at 50% in 2030, you need to build factories that can build, you know, not 13 million, but 50 million motors. And the motor manufacturers, so the auto industry says we're going to need 50 million motors, electric vehicle motors by 2030. The motor manufacturers say, well, we'd have to build a bunch of factories to meet that level of demand, and we have trouble getting financing because we don't have offtake agreements for these motors, and we're not quite sure what technology we're going to use. And then you have this whole issue of rare earths, and, you know, we've said repeatedly, if you can't get the raw materials to build the electric vehicles, you can't build the electric vehicles. So that's a big headwind that has caused us to have a much slower growth in the electric vehicle market. Not that electric vehicles aren't coming, but that they just can't take as large of a share of the market as some people seem to think.
So what are some of the big advancements, some of the big, I guess, developments in this electric vehicle market that you think can drastically change the uses, and do they bring in other metals that we should be paying a bit more attention to?
Right. Well, first off, on the battery technology, you've already seen, like, over the last 10 years. 10 years ago, we were telling our clients, don't invest in long-term copper cobalt development plans because the battery manufacturers are going to shift away from cobalt sulfate to manganese sulfate, and they have. So the projected demand, it's not the actual demand that we've seen over the last 5 years so much as it's the projections of future demand for cobalt, have been cut by two-thirds already. You know, you've gone from 30% cobalt sulfate to 10% cobalt sulfate, and battery manufacturers, some of them are looking to reduce it even further. So you've already lost 67% of what you had expected of that future market. Another one is rare earths. And, you know, you have a number of issues with rare earth supply, and we've said, look, if you can't find the rare earth to build rare earth magnets to put in the motors, you'll use a different magnet. And one of the things that we've been studying recently is the research going into iron nitride magnets, which are twice as powerful as rare earth element magnets, and they can reduce the size of the motors, and they use scrap iron and nitrogen, two very common cheap raw materials. So development work is going on with iron nitride batteries. Several auto companies are financing and development work and investing in companies doing that research and development work. And that could then preclude the need for rare earth mines. So, you know, why would the U.S. government spend money to reopen an old mine in California when in 3 to 5 years we may not need those rare earths? And that kind of technological uncertainty then causes capital to pull back, and that slows the speed at which you can introduce electric vehicles and windmills.
All right, Jeff, we're out of time for this segment, but we're going to continue chatting next segment. So everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com, and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com.
look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at mysolarbackup.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veterans, nonprofits, and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Here we are, wrapping up the weekend edition of the KE Report, continuing to chat with Jeff Christians, managing partner at the CPM Group. We are continuing to focus on critical minerals. Now, Jeff, you just went through how you thought maybe the overall demand for certain commodities due to batteries is going to maybe not reach some of these huge projected levels. Can we then carry this over to this general run that we have seen and the interest in critical minerals is almost overheating these markets now?
Yes. And, you know, one of the points I make, like in the battery sector, a lot of people look at the amount of battery factories, gigafactories that are being invested in and developed and built. And we said, don't look at the capacity to build the batteries. Look at the likely demand of those for those batteries. Because if you add up all the gigafactories that are being planned or developed or built, and you compare that to the likely demand for those batteries, you're probably going to be seeing the lithium-ion battery industry operating at something like 30 to 50% capacity, which is unprofitable for most industries, which means a lot of those factories either don't get built or never operate or close down after a few years of operation. And I think that that's a real fear that investors looking at these technologies and these emerging technologies and the energy transition, you have to be aware of that. And then going back to the battery technology, we're all still talking about lithium-ion batteries with liquid cathodes, but you know there's a lot of work going on with solid state cathodes, which could change the chemistry. There's work about adding manganese to iron phosphate, lithium-ion phosphate batteries. There's talk about sodium batteries. There's talk about calcium batteries. There's all kinds of technological uncertainties that should cause investors to take a very cautious approach to investing in these pie-in-the-sky technologies that haven't been proven.
No, they haven't, but there is a lot of money going into this stuff. It does lead to growth and innovation, but that's why I think it's also so exciting, is that this is more innovation than anything, as we are still figuring out what works. One other aspect of these critical minerals, or especially in batteries, is the option to recycle batteries or metals that have already been used in other areas to build other things. Do you focus at all on the recycling options that are available?
Yeah, we always have, and that's another thing that's distinguished there. So if you look at lithium, you know, lithium-ion batteries, lithium-ion batteries have always been recyclable. But the reality is that the vast majority of them, recyclers will take the cobalt out and they'll burn off the lithium. And there's a real push now to get the battery manufacturers to use recycled lithium. And if you look at the lithium market and you say, SQM actually could produce enough lithium that you don't need any of these hard rock mines that are being financed and developed now. And then you add in the recycling, that's true in spades. And so you can say, no, it's not going to happen. And you're seeing more and more companies and governments push into recycling lithium-ion batteries. And that's radically going to reduce the need for hard rock lithium mines.
Well, Jeff, one more question that comes to mind is a narrative around the critical minerals has been the role of copper, that for the charging stations for EV, we're going to need a lot more copper. Inside the engines, we're going to need quite a bit more copper than we found in traditional internal combustion engines. Does any of these new developments or new technology in battery tech or in the energy or the projections being off a little bit affect your outlook on copper?
Yes, well, not my outlook, because I've taken a very cynical approach toward the copper projection compared to some other people who make these incredible projections. Copper will be needed, and more copper will be needed as we move toward electrifying things. But if you just go at the motors, if you switch to iron nitride magnets, the motors could be half the size rare earth element motors. That means that the amount of copper needed in those motors can be cut in half. Now, the copper winding in motors and generators is only one factor in copper demand, but it's a very big factor. You're still going to need copper wiring. You're still going to need copper connectors and other components. But copper for use in motors and generators could be cut in half with the advent of these more powerful magnets.
So then, Jeff, also one thing that we should talk about is governments being, it seems like, more supportive of these type of projects, even freeing up capital. Do you follow where that money's going, or at least where these pools of money have been made available in terms of the different metals from some of the largest governments in the world?
Yes, we do. And, you know, one of the points I make, not only with government support of factories and mines and technologies, but with private investments, you know, you can drive around the United States, you can drive around Europe and other parts of the world, and you can find a lot of factories and mines that are closed, not because they ran out of material to mine, but because they were sub-economic. And, you know, I'm very, like, for example, we have the lithium deposit in Nevada where they're fighting over whether or not to mine it. And the U.S. government is very much in favor of developing that mine. And that is a very bad financial decision on the part of the U.S. government, as far as I'm concerned. It's a bad investment, and it's also bad from a longer-term perspective, and it's this very nationalistic, isolationistic attitude. The same is true with Mountain Dew, the rare earths mine that was closed decades ago in California. And the government is being pressured to finance reopening it That'll be money. You know, this is a country, this is a government that's what, got a $1.7 trillion deficit and $32 trillion in debt. And they really can't afford to throw hundreds of millions or billions of dollars into mining developments that ought not to be built.
Well, Jeff, just to that point, what about all the companies that are also partnering with mining companies? We've seen a lot of end users and manufacturing companies partner with lithium companies and nickel companies. You know, these are big companies like your Fords and GMs of the world, large auto manufacturers, and even some manufacturing companies. Are they maybe making these same kind of poor investments?
They may be making big mistakes. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, we've worked with the auto industry since the 70s, with virtually every non-Chinese automaker over the last half century. And traditionally, the automakers never invested in mines. If they saw a mining company that needed investment funds that was going to produce something that they needed, they would go to the investment management companies that manage their pension funds and say, this company is looking at a PGM property in Wyoming or Ontario, and we think it's a very interesting property, and we need exposure to non-Russian PGMs. So it would be great if you would invest some of our pension funds and any other money that you're managing into that company. Traditionally, the auto companies have not invested directly in the mining companies. But over the last 2 years, they have been. And I'm not quite sure what my final analysis is as to why that change has occurred. There are changes in the pension fund management industry that have had an effect. There are any number of times when the auto companies have asked their pension fund managers to make those investments, and those investments lost them money. And I'm not quite sure what all is involved that has led to auto companies directly investing in mines. Part of it may be that the people they used to squeeze for those investments have said, I'm sorry, I've lost too much money doing those favors for you. I don't want to do that anymore. It could be that it's not that the auto industry said, we should invest in these mines directly for whatever reasons. It could be that the auto industry has been told, we're not going to invest in those mines for you. If you want them invested in, you've got money, invest it.
I find this sector and this whole movement, this energy transition, so interesting because we do have governments seemingly more on board with some of these projects, some of the different metals, but as you also pointed out, man, oh man, governments can make some pretty bad investments too. Jeff, thank you very much for your time, shifting a little bit away from just the precious metals. And everybody, thank you for tuning in to this weekend show. Be sure to check out our website and podcast to keep up to date on daily market moves. Jeff, everyone listening, again, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment. Attention, your money is now controlled by the U.S. government.
Picture a world where your every purchase is monitored, tracked, and controlled by those in power to suppress the freedoms of those they see fit. Hi, my name is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and New York Times bestselling author. And right now, I've become very focused on the impending rollout of the central bank digital currency. This is not a work of fiction. It's a terrifying reality looming on the horizon. But there is a bit of good news. I've partnered with Advantage Gold to offer you a solution. They are specialists in converting your traditional assets, like those inside an IRA or 401k, into tangible assets such as physical gold and silver. Don't allow your money to be controlled. Claim your free gold protection kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000, 800-900-8000, that's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Call 800-900-8000.
Did you get a call or message that mentioned Social Security that made you feel threatened or scared? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, press you for personal information, or demand instant payment. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Don't fall for it. Hang up, ignore them. Report this criminal activity to oig.ssa.gov.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.